Hello, hello to the people listening. I am Ryan. My name's Ryan, and you're listening to my podcast, Me and All My Friends. Welcome to the show. Welcome to it. You're listening. You're already here. What's going on? Are you having a good December? Is your year winding down appropriately? I say that because it could be, you know, winding down for the worse, or it could be winding down for the better. You could be thinking back. Are you reflecting? That's like the most important thing at this point of the year is are you reflecting? Are you processing what happened and what you're going to do in the new year? Or maybe you're just, you know, focused on the harangue of the holidays, the relentless harangue of buying presents, which I have still not finished. If you have any ideas for presents, please let me know, because I'm not good at it. Sometimes I'm good. Some people, like, there's definitely some people where it's, like, easy. And it's not always year to year, it's different people. But sometimes it's like, oh, this person, oh, yeah, they had a year where they were really interested in a single thing, in a very manageable thing. Boom. Christmas present, easy, done. Other years, it's like, I don't know. It's like a staring at a blank wall. It's not even a brick wall, like a blank, just white, just or black. I don't know. Well, in any case, I hope you're having a December. Whatever that December is, it definitely, you know, has a flavor these months. There's year after year, it feels like, you know, maybe with little fringes of this and that, depending on the year, depending on the context of the month. But, you know, there's always this year-end thing. Things are winding down. Not a lot of new things are beginning. A lot of things are ending. And maybe even if some new stuff should be beginning, there's no desire to start those new things. So they just kind of sit. So, you know, that's what's going on. What is beginning is my conversation with the incredible Logan Ritchie. I was so excited to talk to him. We actually did this a few months ago, and he is like one of the most unique creative minds that I know. He just has this way of thinking and this way of doing that is just unparalleled. I mean, the way he thinks about comedy and writing and just even in his day-to-day life, the way he is just so snappy and on it, I guess. And he's very quick. And, you know, the conversation, I think he shows that, but also we really get into just his life and where he comes from and end up, I think, touching on some really kind of introspective good things. And I was really, I was just so happy with how this went. And this is really one of my favorite conversations I've had. So I hope you enjoy it. Before you get there, if you want to maybe press pause, or you can do it while you're still listening, head over to the iTunes store and, you know, press a little subscribe, leave a little review, make sure that you're getting these new episodes because they are coming out, because they will be reaching your ears very, very soon in a repeated fashion. So, you know, if you're into those things, go ahead and do it. If not, I don't know, reanalyze yourself. Maybe be like, I need more good daily conversation. Not daily, but I need more good regular conversation in my life. And so I'm going to subscribe to Me and All My Friends. That's what you should do. Very soon, the show will actually be on Spotify if that's easier for anyone to listen to. So be on the lookout for that. But for now, here it is, Logan Ritchie.
Yeah, a showerhead. I want this already. This room feels like a hotel to me. And so I want to amp that up as much as I can because I love hotels. As
oh,
you know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, I need to not do that.
No. I'm leaning in. Mm-hmm. So I'm, yeah, rainfall showerhead. I just ordered a white cotton robe. I want to be able to take this mug from here in my robe out onto the patio and sit amongst the scented geraniums. And every time I brush past them, a waft of lemon scent is released.
All right.
And that's executable.
I get it. But every time you walk by, so you would need a motion censored.
No, scented geraniums are the scent comes from the leaves, not the flowers. And when you walk past, it's like
Oh, I thought you were talking about like a burst, like a spritz of
no, like a Febreze. Like an Air Wick Freshmatic Ultra.
Yeah, but like with a like a motion sensor.
No, it's the biohack version of that.
But that would be the hotel version,
right? Right. But this is like artificial. This is like the new wave B&B version, which is harkening back to like Victorian England when they would put some geraniums in their parlors and the huge dresses would make them aerate whenever like ladies walked past.
Oh god. Ha! It's too much. This is the end of the episode. All right. I'm a little out of practice. I gotta.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever we need to do.
Yeah. Hi. Hello. It's me. It's Ryan. I'm here with my friend. Again, not a guy. Some people have like very clear nouns,
right?
Like writer,
an
whatever.
Epitaph, yeah,
you don't really have one. I mean, do you have one for yourself? I mean, some people have ones. Like,
yeah, no, I think writer performer.
Okay, but you keep it in that as opposed to like Sam Vest. His was like he's an occupational dreamer. Or like, you know.
Oh, like one that's like fancy?
Yeah.
If I had to give myself a fancy one, I would say,
You don't have to.
If I was asked to, then this is what I would do. I would do, Agent of Chaos and Mystery.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Which is apt.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, when I was just going to the bathroom about when we actually met. And it must have just been, like, I don't know, my apartment?
It was probably at your apartment. I think you were sitting at your desk. Yeah, I actually remember it. I remember I came in, and I was doing something with Hannah,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps Megan as well. And I came in, and Hannah was like, that's Megan's boyfriend, Ryan. And you turned around, and you were like, hey. And that was it.
Yeah. But it was a while before it was, like, you were buddies with Hannah, but it was a while before, like,
I broke the seal into your apartment.
Well, yeah, I mean, because even, like, now you're, like, in a guy that I've known for 8 years' apartment as his roommate. Like,
right.
Like, it was a while before there was a weaseling in of, oh, that's not just Logan, it's, like, a guy that lives down the street kind of a thing.
Right, yeah, I didn't know if you guys were going to be my core group. and not in like an America's Next Top Model way.
Yeah, you were like auditioning. You were like,
but just I knew that I remembered in college. It took me. I like made a bunch of friends who were around me the mm-hmm. first year.
Yeah,
realized that they were all garbage, and then the second year, people that I didn't really even think of
yeah.
sort of started to creep in and become true loving friends.
Sure,
and
sure,
I was
sure,
like,
sure.
Okay, so it takes 2 years.
Yeah,
and it feels good after that. And so I knew that going into LA, and so that's why I, like, waited a long time instead right. of just glomming on to whoever was around.
Wait, how long have you been in LA?
2.5 years.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought it was, like, much more than that. Mm-mm. I don't know.
No.
Because you...
Yeah, well, it's because I graduated the same time as you did, but I waited for a year waiting tables and saving money / on probation, not able to leave the state.
Man, what a teaser. What a teaser. So, because these are, I don't have a lot of Logan facts either. North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
Raleigh.
Yes.
Siblings?
Yes, two older brothers, Mormon family.
Mormon family. Mormon since before you were, I know your parents converted.
Yes, and then I was the first kid born into the church.
Whoa, so your first two siblings, so they converted in between your... How much older are your brothers?
My middle brother is just a year and a half. So oh, okay. We're basically Irish twins. And then my oldest brother is 5 years older.
Okay. So, like, normal
yeah.
family.
Yeah, nothing yeah. crazy.
Yeah, like, me to my... It's like, my family is, like, 3-3, one. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's a normal family split.
Only a year older? You're...
No, oh no, it's like me 3 years, a sister 3 years,
oh, between
one
them.
And a half years.
It fucking sister. Sucks.
Yeah, yeah, it's whatever. So there was a conversion, and we were just talking about this the other day, but was there like, besides like it seeming to you like kind of a random event, was there like a reason your parents converted? Because obviously, like, converting into Mormonism is. Like
a bit of a step.
It's like the jumping the shark of converting to a religion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my mom was Methodist already, and my dad like grew pot in college and didn't do shit, and just wanted to like get into real estate. Like I don't exactly know why it happened for him.
Yeah,
But for her, it was because her sister, my aunt, converted, and they had, like, 8 children.
Whoa.
And so, and they were like, they watch your kids for you. and so, my, and it, they're very, Mormons are very good about family.
Uh-huh.
That's, like, their whole
thing.
Yeah,
that's the whole, it's, like, a big community.
And I would say at the expense of other things, perhaps.
Sure.
And so that's why it was appealing, mm-hmm. I think, for a sort of young family.
Right.
And I don't know. They just got him. Mormons are really good at converting people.
Right.
Because
even, like, your dad, like, being more of, like, a hippie guy, or I would assume to be, like, somebody of a hippie guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's full-tilt Mormon.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and he's pretty conservative. I think he was more open when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gotten, it's like he had, like, a conservative sort of hill in the middle of his life.
Sure.
Because he's a little more mellow now, too.
Right.
As
it is, it seems.
Yeah.
For most people,
maybe, others. Yeah. We've talked about their conversion story, but I've never really gotten to the core why, other than, like, it felt right or it made sense, which isn't really specific.
Has that ever, like, harped on you in terms of, like, like, a broader, like, identity thing?
Yeah, well, I was really upset when I was a teenager and when I was still going to church, uh-huh. because I knew that my parents hadn't had to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And they were turning around and asking me
sure.
to do this stuff that's really hard. Like, being a Mormon teenager is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention if you have anything going on that doesn't jive, mm-hmm. which makes it worse.
What kind of hard? Like, because you didn't have to do a mission ever.
I didn't have to do a mission. A mission is harder than the stuff that
I
had to do. Because you're away from home for 2 years, but it's also, like, awesome. And, like, everybody's study abroad wet dream.
Yeah.
but when you're a Mormon teenager, you can't drink tea or coffee. You can't do any drugs or be around any drugs. You can't go to parties. You're mm-hmm. not allowed to go to dances. You're not allowed to date one-on-one.
Uh-huh.
And even then, you're only allowed to date within the church in groups.
Sure.
Not polygamy. but just, like, a group hangout where you have your eye on a particular eligible girl. It's awful. And you're not allowed to watch any R-rated movies your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just all these little things that don't seem like a big deal, but once you stand back and look at it, you realize that you can't hang out with anybody outside the church because you just can't do any of the things they're doing.
Sure.
So it's just really insular. And you have to go to Bible study for an hour every morning before high school.
And you, like, felt all of that. Like, did you rebel against it in high school?
I started to. And there's this whole thing where, surprise, I'm gay. And realizing that, it was like I already don't want to do this stuff. And this mm-hmm. church kind of already doesn't make sense to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And with that knowledge of, like, oh, I also have a different thing that they will be very mad about if I try to make this work. It was like, okay, this isn't worth it at all.
Right.
And I'm going to try to leave.
Right.
That was, like, the sort of math of it.
Right.
Was
there ever a struggle so far as you being gay and in the church, or was it pretty immediately like,
did I ever think about making it work?
For
a second, because I mean, it's scary.
Right.
And they're just so bad about that stuff that it's like, it's pretty clear that you've got to kind of either, you know, be closeted for the rest of your life.
Sure.
And some people do that.
Yeah.
When I was talking to my parents about it, after I came out, my mom said that there were, like, a couple of people in the church who, you wouldn't know it, but had, quote, struggled with same-sex attraction and were now leading celibate lives within the church because that's what they chose.
Huh.
And I was like, who is it?
Yeah.
but it was, so people do that.
Yeah.
And so that's something I could have done, but I didn't feel good.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, it just the tenets of the church. I started to research it, and the more that I found out about it,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't tell us, the more I was like, okay,
yeah,
this is not for me. I'm gonna go.
Where are you at, like, now with your? I mean, do you have a good relationship with your parents?
Yeah,
still?
Thankfully I do.
Good.
I think them being converts helped. That because a lot of families, you'll see sort of this long line where, like, they'll like pass the, like, Mormon authority down through, like, generations, and you'll have, like, charts in the family home about, like, who gave your great-grandfather the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really intense. And so in those families, it's much more difficult.
Sure.
And, like, people get sent to camps.
Sure.
And that never happened to me. So that was very good.
Yeah.
The hardest part was just sort of the revealing of it and then getting them to let me stop going to church because they really wanted to hold on. And I think they were holding out hope that, like, if they could just keep me in church, then it would Maybe not even straighten me out, but at least just be something.
Yeah, instill you with some sense of the morals or something like that.
And
yeah.
I was fighting. I fought very hard to stop going because Mormon Church is 3 hours long and it's just so dogmatic. And it's like, yeah, boring plus people I don't get along with.
Right.
I don't want to.
Sure. So growing up in Raleigh, what is Raleigh like? Are you in the city or are you outside the city?
Suburbs. Suburbs. So, yeah, the classic, like, it looks just like Pasadena.
Sure. So just classic Americana.
Classic American suburb.
Is it on the water? I don't.
There's rivers. Uh-huh. And Raleigh is called the City of Trees, which is boring.
Yeah.
But it's like foresty. It's like a giant woodland.
Uh-huh.
Which I love.
Yeah.
My dad likes to hunt, and my brothers did too. So there's plenty of land to do that. Cool. There's a lot of open space, but it's also Raleigh is like a fairly liberal, moderately sized city, so mm-hmm. like we had a bit of a downtown, so you get a little bit of everything.
Sure. Are you close to your siblings? Like, who are you in school? Like, what's the growing up in Raleigh? Like what's your day to day? The generalization of your childhood.
Right.
Are you outside? Or are you what's the
deal? Very outside. Very much. I feel like I didn't have a normal childhood.
Uh-huh.
Because A, I have like outdoorsy, hard work oriented parents.
Okay.
And then B, the Mormon thing on top of that.
Sure.
So we were like playing in the creek, and I think a lot of people play in the creek, but we were also like never watching television.
Right.
So we were like feral children.
Did you have friends?
Yeah, we had neighborhood friends. I think in school, there's kind of sort of two versions where at home with my brothers, I was like sort of very myself and just very adventurous and exploratory, and that was great. And we like all played instruments,
uh-huh.
And that's like a very Mormon thing. Everybody plays an instrument, and would I would even play sports, and I would like it. But then at school, I felt like I was kind of like inside of a seed pod
mm-hmm.
for like the first like 10 years of my schooling, like well into high school,
right?
Just because I felt like I didn't know the rules.
Like just like socially?
Yeah, or? Yeah, socially. And I think that's part of where my sense of humor comes from mm-hmm. is when I was a little kid, being Mormon in a public school full of just like run-of-the-mill Christian kids.
Right.
I like didn't know what any of them were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't listen to the Backstreet Boys. I don't get a lot of pop culture references still.
Right.
And that when you're a kid is a big deal because it's all anybody talks about.
Sure.
And so, and also like, my dad was a chef and my food was always weird and we were never allowed to buy lunch. And uh-huh. so there were just sort of these little things that made me feel like I was just kind of on the fringe.
Uh-huh.
Like I would sit at recess and like read the Chronicles of Narnia in a corner of the fence. And it's funny because it got to where other kids would come up to me and we would start talking about it. And uh-huh. so I still drew people in and I still talked to people, but I just didn't really know how to fully, like, I felt like I was always kind of, like, crunching myself in
mm-hmm.
For a long time, just because I didn't know what was going on.
Was there, like, a catalyst to change that, or was it just kind of, like, you naturally coming into your own?
No, I think, I was in band for a long time, and then towards the end of middle school, I finally started doing theater, and uh-huh. it, being a gay kid in theater
mm-hmm.
is like finally realizing that you're not wrong. And not even in like a
sure.
in like a sentimental way, but in a way where it's like, wow, I can finally like talk about things with my friends.
Sure. So it's the attraction of like, oh, all of a sudden you're surrounded by people who are way more free just naturally.
Yeah.
And you've always wanted to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yes. 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 And that's why I think I like weird jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because theater was finally, like, just something that felt easy and that I felt mm-hmm. like I understood.
Right.
Which didn't happen for a long time. Because I thought that, like, the thing was to try to find... It was like, I'm just not finding the right sport.
Right. Well, in a way, like, theater was
yeah,
the right...
Yeah,
what were your plays? Like, what were the ones for you? Oh, did you do it all through high school?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did. Middle school was very simple. It was just, like, Aladdin Jr. and, like, Into the Woods Jr.
Because Aladdin Jr. is already Aladdin Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. So this
just,
one... They literally
shorter?
Just put five narrators in, so there could be more female parts. That's all. And they each sung one line of Arabian Nights. It was truly terrible.
Yeah, every time they say Arabian Nights, it's like Susie and then Michelle.
Oh my god. My girlfriend was a narrator. She was one of the five. Yeah.
Good. So you do theater. So by the end of high school, are you, like, not fully baked Logan, but are you, like...
on the way.
Whatever the transition point for your identity, is that at the end of high school, or is that...
Kind of. So the summer before my junior year was when I finally left the church, got my first boyfriend, who was a secret.
Okay.
And he lived, like, two cities away, and neither of us had cars.
How did you meet him?
On the Wake County Schools Gay Straight Alliance Facebook page, because I was networking.
It's funny. I was thinking about what is the Gay Straight Alliance? We had a name for it. Gay Straight.
Ours was just GSA. Some people have names for it.
I feel like we had a name for it.
Like allies or like,
yeah,
or like the fortress.
And I remember, and I like the people in that group, and they were kind of like, like, it was definitely, like a kind of weirdos.
If Tumblr was a person.
I never really used Tumblr, so I kind of get it. But, like now, I feel like if I was in high school now, I'd be like, oh, yeah, like, fuck yeah, I'll do the Gay Straight Alliance.
Yeah.
But I remember it was so, like, off the charts in, like, 2008.
Well, it was harder to join back then because it was more fringy. It was weirder, and it was more of a big step. I remember, like, after I was out, I would have friends sort of ask me nervously about joining it. And I wasn't super active in it, but I'd be like, yeah, go. Like, nobody's going to picket the hallway.
Right.
But still, there was that feeling. But yeah, I met him through that, and we couldn't drive to each other. And like, so we were like chomping at the bit every chance we could get to see each other. And so I had my friend, Anna, who could drive. We like arranged for her to drive me to the South Point Mall halfway between us on like a Saturday when my parents were going up to Virginia for a business conference.
Cool.
And this was like, yes. Yeah,
this is the big one.
And, the day before, and my parents were leaving, and they had known that something was up with me, but they couldn't figure out what it was.
Good.
And I was also researching like full deep into the church and like debunking it and didn't tell them. So there was like a lot happening, and the day they were leaving, and the day before, my mom said, we want this to be kind of an experiment. Because we actually talked about whether we could trust you alone in the house over the weekend, for this conference, and we're going to do it. And this will be a great way to sort of touch base and check in and see how we're feeling about each other and how we're doing. And I was like, great.
Oh, I love this. I love where this is going.
To be fair, I wasn't going to have him over.
Yeah.
I was just going to the mall to make out with him.
You were like 17? 18.
I was 17.
Okay.
And we had not kissed. So this was like very high stakes.
You hadn't even kissed a boy yet?
No, never.
Amazing.
So like, imagine.
Yeah.
So then my friend texted me the night before. Anna texted me the night before and was like, I just got in a huge fight with my mom. I can't take the car for the weekend. I can't do it. And so my mental Rolodex started going and I was like, okay, there has to be a way for me to get to the mall.
Yeah.
And I had just reconnected with this friend that I made in first grade named Kristen Nelms. And she was like, she's like, if you went to a shelter and she's like the dog that's like in the corner, kind of wary, but you know that like, you know that she's so powerful because she's
what?
Well, she doesn't like come up to people, right? She's kind of reserved and kind of on the fringes, but you can always sort of see her like watching. In a very powerful way.
I'm just gonna let you have that one.
she's just like, I can't even really describe her, but she's just like a such a strange product of the suburbs.
Sure.
In a way.
Right.
Like kind of like a Janicean, a little bit.
Sure,
from Mean Girls.
Yeah.
But so I had just, we were friends in first grade and I remember like jumping on her canopy bed once and then never talking again. And then we had just become friends again. I don't remember why, but she was like a rebel.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have any rebel friends because I was still barely Mormon.
Uh-huh.
And I texted Kristen and was like, what should I do? And she was like, does your dad have any spare keys? And I realized that he did. And he had like a 2000 Chevy Trailblazer in the driveway that was ripe for the picking. I didn't even have my license.
Mm-hmm.
I had my permit, so you're not allowed to drive without an adult in the car.
Yeah.
And I truly, like, did not know what a highway was.
Yeah.
But I wanted this to happen so badly. that I was like, yeah, you'll come with me. We'll MapQuest it.
Yeah.
2010.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to the mall and it'll be great. And it'll be an adventure. So I burned a Sweet Mix CD for the road and I picked Kristen up on Saturday morning and we had our MapQuest directions printed out. And we got there and it was fine. And I kissed Josh in the front row of Iron Man 2 because those were the only seats left because we were late.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. And then it came time to leave and Josh's parents picked him up. And I realized that we hadn't printed out directions for the way home. And I didn't know whether the highway directions changed. Like, we took 540 West to get there. So should I take the opposite one or should I get on the same one?
Oh, shit.
And I got on the same one and it took us 2 hours to get home. Because we went the wrong way.
Yeah.
And had a whole thing. And so Kristen ended up sleeping over at my house. And when my parents came home, she was already gone. And I thought everything was fine. And my dad was like, hey, the CD player in my car isn't working. Do you know anything about it? And I was just like, Kristen brought over a CD and we tried to listen to it. Maybe we messed something up. Because we don't have a CD player in the house, so we just use the one in your car.
Uh-huh.
Sorry about that. And he was like, okay, cool. Oh, and why are there 93 extra miles on my odometer?
Fuck!
And that's when I was like, okay, here we go. So that ended with me.
I like how he saved it.
Yeah, well, yeah. My dad loves that shit.
Yeah.
Like, and I get a little bit of that from him of just like the, let's figure this out.
Yeah.
But, of course, he like checked his fucking odometer.
Yeah.
He's like,
smart.
Yeah, so, So that ended with me telling him, well, I stole your car to go to the mall to see my gay boyfriend.
Oh, no. So you went full tilt. You went
because we were, like, yelling, like, full yelling at each other about just how they wanted me to tell them what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I never talked to them. And I came back with, like, I'm scared to tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I know that I'll get punished for it.
Yeah.
In, like, a way that I don't even deserve.
Yeah.
For this, maybe I did, but just for the boyfriend thing, no. And so I struck a deal with them that I would tell them everything if I could start with a clean slate.
Nice.
So they agreed to it, and that's when I said, well, I'm gay, and I took the car to see my boyfriend at the mall. And Kristen was with me.
Uh-huh.
And so after that, there was, like, this summer of, like, unbridled teen rebellion with Kristen, where I just completely, like, went the other way.
Sure.
It was, like, it was doing everything that I had not been able to do.
Sure.
I had a white chocolate mocha. I, like...
oh, no!
And we would... Yeah, it was, like... And it rose exponentially from there. And that was, like, the first sort of phase of baking of a fully baked Logan.
Yeah. And so you were going nuts because it was all pent up.
Oh, yeah. And that's when I found out that the rules aren't real.
Yeah.
That was, like, a very important part. Because my whole thing now with everything that I write and everything that I do is, let's see if we can do something that no one's ever done before.
Yeah.
Or poke something that people don't generally poke.
Sure.
And that summer was like, oh, nothing is real. You can get drunk on cheap vodka on the lawn of the Mormon church and no one will care because Boy Scouts isn't until Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like it only from that vantage point too, could you have, like, learned it in, like, that extreme of a way.
Yeah, just because, like, I wouldn't have to question things if I didn't have all of those stupid rules.
Sure.
That I hadn't been able to break.
If there wasn't water leaking through the cracks a little bit.
Right. And so just because I feel like I grew up in a maze, now it's like I appreciate more than the average person the ability to run around.
Sure. Do you see, as far as, like, are your siblings, like, Mormons?
My oldest brother still is, but he's also very liberal, so it's strange. My middle brother left shortly after I did because he wanted to smoke weed. So, like, you're welcome.
Well, and maybe, like, you don't totally have a perspective on this, but, like kids that are, I mean, kids, like, people even our age that are still in the church that didn't have that rebellious phase, what do you think that is? Because, like,
why do I think that they stayed?
Yeah, because isn't it natural to assume that, like, most people would have a phase like you have, where even if they came back to it,
right?
Like a rebellious phase, but, like, aren't there, like, a lot of people that stay in the church, they're committed to it, and then they ride all the way through that?
Yes, and I think that's because the church is comfortable, and that it's interesting because I don't agree with any of the things that they say, but I picked up some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I never would have done that rebellious phase if I wasn't gay.
Right.
I needed something that was just so incongruous.
Right.
to get me to leave, because it's scary to leave an institution.
Sure.
It's really scary.
Sure.
And so if I hadn't had that thing that was like, oh, this is not going to work here, which right. most people don't have that.
Sure.
Then they stay.
Right.
So maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's like, why are all of us still capitalists or whatever? Or like, why do all of us still believe in America? It's because we don't have anything that doesn't agree at our core
right.
with it.
Right.
And the ones who do are like on a commune somewhere.
Like cut to you in 10 years or whatever. Like,
yeah, I'm buying up land.
So do you go to school for the film stuff?
Yes.
Because by the time you leave high school, you're creative.
Yes.
In a way where you're thinking you could do it.
Yeah. And actually most of my sort of creative leanings towards at the end of high school were towards like what I would call like just performance art.
Right.
Just like artistic happenings, as mm-hmm. opposed to like, I want to make movies or I want to write.
So it was an unspecific creativity. It wasn't like you were going and being like, I want to go make a pilot or some crap like
that. Yeah, it wasn't anything that had, the only form that it had taken was just like strange public works of art, which I still love to do to this day, but right. which isn't something that you can, well, you can go to school for it, but it's harder.
Yeah, you can't quantify it.
Yeah, like if I had the bent to like apply to a bunch of art schools and really like get into like actual artistic performance,
yeah.
I'd feel like I would have loved that. But I was much more aimless
yeah.
and just knew that I liked to do that kind of stuff. And so I went to school undecided, just okay. like a very mediocre state school in uh-huh. North Carolina. Then after a year landed on film.
Uh-huh.
I don't really remember why.
When did you start watching? I mean, I guess you made out with your boyfriend to Iron Man 2. So when yeah. did you start watching stuff?
As opposed to making out during it?
Well, I mean, that, not necessarily that. I'm just saying, like if you were so sheltered coming up, like, when did the pop culture seep into the point of being like, oh, I want to make pop culture?
It was high school. It was, like, during the Summer of Rebellion.
Okay.
When it was like, it's like that moment in, like, shows like Handmaid's Tale where, like, or Cloud Atlas where, like, the sheltered person sees like a movie for yeah. the first time and there's the camera zooms in and it's like, oh
yeah, it's like the Buddha, you know, Buddha sees the poor people for the first
yeah,
time.
And it's yeah. like this whole world that I didn't know was there as a yeah. Mormon. And for me it was like shows like Pushing Daisies.
Okay.
Like early Brian Fuller stuff, but just TV that was sort of whimsical and campy
uh-huh.
In a way that I hadn't seen before that made me really want to get into it.
Right.
And most of the shows were pretty gay. And so there was like, it was probably speaking to a subconscious part of me that's sure. like, oh, you can create stuff that's in your voice because look at other people doing it.
Right.
Which hadn't really occurred to me before because like TV back then was even more networky than it is now.
Yeah, definitely.
And so like, I loved Friends. I would like, we had like a little portable black and white TV for when you were sick from school. And I would keep it in my room because my mom wouldn't let me watch Friends.
Uh-huh.
And I would like dial to like the black and white station of mm-hmm. of NBC and find it in 2004 during the last season in secret.
never did Friends. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I just never did.
Yeah, that's totally. Okay. Yeah.
Was college just a furthering of like becoming Logan who does what he wants?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you made movies.
I did. I made movies. I realized how easy it is to get your stuff made if you are just organized and authoritative.
Totally.
Because I remember, like, I was in the film program.
Yeah.
And there were so many people in it. It was, like, one of the biggest majors at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, like, a shitty school. It was, like, middle of the road.
Right.
We were, like, in our first production class. And it was pitch day for our shorts that you were going to spend the whole semester making. And right. the teacher was like, okay, everybody bring in an idea.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't go, you know, whole hog on it, but everybody else's ideas were like, nobody wrote anything down.
Right.
And it was like, oh, and then I got up and I truly didn't know what was going to happen, but I just pitched my thing and I was like, this is what I want to do. And this is why.
Yeah.
I had like one visual aid and people were so surprised. And I was surprised by how many people came over to my desk during the like milling around portion where like, I want to do it. And I could tell that it was just because I had a clear intention.
You just need to shit. Well, that's like so much of it is this like I feel like I learned the same thing in film school. It was just like, man, all you need to do is just show up.
Yeah.
Like that's all you need to do. And like there were so many kids that like felt the need to be like, like, and maybe this is like a NYU thing, but there was a lot of kids that would like argue with the professors or be like, oh, they didn't get it or they don't know. And I'm like, are you going to school to like have someone to like ignore what someone's trying to teach you?
Yeah. Like, and also like, if you disagree with your professor, make something that's so good that they think it's good in spite of themselves.
They have to reckon
instead
with
of
it,
just
yeah.
talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Show, don't tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a big discovery, mm-hmm. and that made moving to LA a lot less scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people from my program didn't move.
Yeah.
It was just like, what are you guys going to do after graduation? And everyone's kind of like, I don't know. I'll just stay here for a bit. And it's like, you just got a degree in film production.
Yeah, what do you
and do? Our Republican legislature just eviscerated our tax credits, so yeah. like, there's nothing happening in North Carolina.
What, are all those kids, like, still not doing anything?
Yeah, most of them have found other jobs. Some are doing, like, wedding videography or whatever is around there. One kid moved to New York,
uh-huh.
and I went to L.A.
Okay.
And I'm so happy because one of my best friends just told me that she's going to move to Chicago and try uh-huh. to work in the industry, like, this year. And so that was, like, very good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just, like, all you have to do is show up and, like, listen. And that's also a very Mormon thing is, like, there's always something that you could be doing to help. All the time.
Sure.
And my parents were very good about raising us with that of, like, jump up, like, mm-hmm. do the dishes, ask if you can help lift something, mm-hmm. like get up and do it. And that's so deeply ingrained in me that I'm just very comfortable jumping in on a film set.
Right.
And so that's why it was so nice to sort of run through that program.
Sure. And your films are good. I mean, did we only watch the one, the pool one?
No, we watched the other one that's horrible. But that wasn't mine.
Oh no.
That
was the one you were in.
Yeah. And it's only horrible because I'm a horrible actor. It was.
Well, also you're young.
We were 22 and
yeah.
nobody knows what they're doing.
That pool one. I'm going to think about that pool.
Yeah,
short and films to the day that I die.
That's the one that I pitched in the meeting, and it was just like, I can tell, I was thinking about short films,
uh-huh.
and how it was just like, I had all these ideas for like, oh, someone's like late to a job interview, and they have to get there, and it's difficult, or like, and it's just like, I remember freeing myself from, oh, you don't have to do a story that people will get right away.
Sure.
Is a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes I'll sit down to write something and I'll be writing it and then I'll sit back and be like, this sounds stale already and it's just on the page.
Right.
And I realize that it's because I'm trying to write it like other people would expect it to be written,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to trying to write it how I think it would be funny if it went.
Sure.
It's like, write what you really think would be funny. Don't write like what a sitcom audience might laugh at.
Right.
Don't write what you think will be funny. Write what you think is funny.
Where do you see that, like, innate creativity coming from, I guess? Like
comedic voice.
But is there, like, what's the light? Like, when you bend that, like, another dimension, is it really just that, like, intense perspective of having been, like, so kind of shackled up for so long and then feeling the need to, like, rebel against it that, like, you're looking towards the absurd?
Yeah. Yeah. And just like remembering that it's even an option, because
right.
I was going through all these ideas that I didn't like and that were like just things that I had seen.
Yeah.
And trying to do my own version of things that I had seen.
Right.
And it's like, no, you are making a movie in a class in college.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do? And it was like, I want to put a bunch of people in a pool.
Right.
In full clothes, and I don't want them to talk about it, and I just want to do a normal scene
yeah.
in a pool.
It's great.
And it was so much better than anything that I could have done that would have been catering to or pandering to someone else.
Yeah.
It was just, and people think it's funny when you think it's funny and you make it.
Yeah, it's amazing how specific
other people will get it. Like, I think I just wasn't giving my audience enough credit.
Yeah.
And
you can't doubt that
yeah.
either. Yeah.
And it just took remembering that, like, oh shit, this is literally a creative medium,
uh-huh.
and you really can do whatever you want.
Sure. That pool one's going to be that one where whenever you get a first big thing,
mm-hmm.
people are going to dig that Vimeo link up and be like, man, he was always this good. Like,
or at least he was always like this. At the very least, I am not like a lot of other writers.
Yeah.
Good or bad doesn't really factor in, but like at least different.
And then you steal a dinosaur and you get arrested.
Yes.
And that's like a whole, I mean, we don't
know. Yeah, we don't have time. But it was part of, those like performance art type things that I had grown to love to do. And we, I'd been doing them with this really good friend of mine, who, and that's another part of sort of a big part of who I am is, good friends and friends who challenge each other.
Sure.
Is something that just makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a friend who will like a ride or die, just like a friend who will come on adventures with you, who like, you know, so well that you can tell when each other needs to be pushed a little bit and when each other needs to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a friend like that and we were just doing strange things for the sake of doing strange things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that we like got caught on.
Right.
But
there was plenty that you
did not
get caught on.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we just did them because I always feel like whenever I see something that I can't figure out in my day-to-day life, I really appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
And so I want to do that for other people.
Right.
And it also is really good for acting, too. Like, my friend was an actress, and we would always talk about how... Because it's so hard if you're going to do, like, a public bit. It's, like, harder than you could imagine if you've never done it to keep... composure.
Yeah, sure.
And to not break the bit, because your natural instinct whenever people are walking around looking at something you're doing and going, what is that?
Yeah,
you want so badly to be like, this is just a performance, it's a bit, it's for school.
Yeah. But you can't. You
have and
to
not
to
doing
it.
That is like hard but also so satisfying.
Uh-huh.
Because you can be like bone chillingly serious while like taking a takeout bag from McDonald's with a set of mannequin hands, and the more serious you are, the more they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Because they want to say it's just a joke.
Yeah.
But if even there's like a seed of doubt, it's like maybe it wasn't a joke.
Well, and so much of everything nowadays too, especially now, is like people are doing it for the video.
Right.
Or, you know, it's like the do it for the Vine mentality.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite of that.
Yeah, and it's so brazenly like, let me do something wacky that's going to get clicks. It's like, what if you just do something wacky just to shake it up?
Yeah.
Like, just to shake it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it for the existential resonance.
Mm-hmm. My dad was a big, you got this one about giving a flash drive to a guy named Mark at the airport. And it's got a photo that says for Mark.png. It's a picture of a pigeon.
Yeah.
And you just met my dad and told him that the other day. And he was like, man, I really like that Logan guy. Like, he's really a smart guy, that pigeon thing, that's really good. Like, he was a big fan, so.
Yeah, and that's, it's literally.
But like, what reason is there for my dad, like a guy from, you know, a salesperson from Connecticut, to like, find, for that to stick with him to the point where he felt the need to be like, oh yeah, that was good. Because you just go specific and you just go.
Yeah, just, it's stuff that anybody could do, but that for some reason nobody has done yet.
Right.
Like, once you figure out something like that, I can't even describe how fun it is to execute. Because you don't, not everything has to be, like, a big production.
No.
You can make, like, a really simple video as long as it's specific.
Yeah.
And as long as it's got a point of view.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good. Anyway, so you steal the dinosaur. If you want to,
yes.
Anyone that's listening that wants to know more about the story, you can literally Google Logan Ritchie.
Yeah.
Maybe, or Logan Ritchie dinosaur.
Just the name brings up all the articles.
And you'll find his mugshot in the...
We did it for like a specific reason that I won't get into.
Yeah.
Then it became like a national news story in a very unexpected way. And so it like blew up in this way that we didn't expect. And after that, I kind of like went a little straighter.
Uh-huh.
And was on probation for a year and couldn't leave North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Still graduated college.
Okay.
Still doing great.
Yeah.
And
then when you came out here to intern.
Yeah.
Or was there anything?
No. I actually have like this weird loathing of internships.
Did you meet Hannah interning?
No, I was working.
Oh, okay. For some reason I thought you were interning.
No, I just have never wanted to do one.
Uh-huh.
It just seems, it's like everyone was always telling me you have to do an internship to have success.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's see.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I came out here with knowing nobody.
Right.
And I had like a list of like the 5 alumni from my school that were working in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I met with them for coffee and asked them how they got started. Because if they did it, then I want to figure out how.
Yeah.
And I met with this one person, Angela, who's wonderful. And I ended up working in post-production for her as her PA. That was my first industry job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I met Hannah.
Right.
And then I met you via Hannah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was very lucky. I fell into an industry job after 6 months out here.
Nice.
And it was a great team and they helped me so much. So I've been very fortunate in that regard. And then I made the leap over to the writer's department this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like waiting on, I've been in the room for a network show, Timeless, on NBC, which is like a time travel drama. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you explained it to me, I was like, oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And it's the showrunner is Eric Kripke, who created Supernatural. And
which is huge.
And I grew up on Supernatural. And so it was like very cool for me.
And that's still on?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Season 14, baby.
Jeez.
I'm not still watching. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But those boys are cute, and they fight monsters. So I was in, and like, I truly like watched it like on the floor of my best friend's basement in like sophomore year. So it was so cool to be able to be working on a show from this guy.
Yeah.
And I still don't think he knows. And
you?
He knows. I don't think he knows that I'm a fan.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we've ever talked about it.
But he was like the showrunner, so you were interacting with him.
Oh, yeah. Day. I talk to him all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially now that I'm in the writer's room, because he's in there all the time.
Right.
So I'm working on a show that I like, and we just got canceled by NBC, but we're maybe getting a movie, and so I'm, like, in a weird limbo right now, but I was a writer's PA for a long time, which is the production assistant,
right.
Which is, like, getting lunches and sometimes sitting in the room, but then you have to leave to go make a copy of something.
Yeah.
It's, like, the entry level, and then I was able to move up to writer's assistant, which is where you're taking a transcript of what all the writers are saying.
Yeah.
And that's very fun.
Yeah.
And I love doing that.
Yeah, that was all... When I moved to LA, like, all I wanted was a writer's assistant.
Yeah, and they're really tough jobs to get. Yeah. And I only... Like, I did it because the writer's assistant on the show was writing an episode, and so I just moved up and filled in for her. And it was like... Because that's the way that it works.
Once you're
in, you just kind of have to work your way up.
Yeah.
And people are... Like, industry people at large are very good about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've experienced that, too, in freelancing, where everyone is like... Everyone is like good about being in contact and like,
yeah, and bumping each other up.
Yeah.
And you hire the people that you work with.
Yeah. I thought everybody would be a lot meaner out here, I think.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if anyone's like super mean. I've had like bad run-ins with like coordinators and stuff. Like I still have an email in my drafts for like a really scathing, I was going to send the producer. It's really scathing.
Oh, like a dressing down.
Yeah. Of like this coordinator who was like really treating me like crap, and then my dad was like, it's not worth it to send that email.
Yeah
but no one's like me. That's such a misconception I feel like about like LA as a whole.
Yeah.
Is that like people are gonna be mean?
Well, people in the South love to talk about LA like it's impossible. Every time I would tell them I was moving, they would just be like, oh my god, how are you gonna deal with the traffic?
Yeah,
everything's so expensive. And it's...
It is
to a point.
But it's also like...
But it's also like 4 million people live here every day.
Yeah.
And they're doing fine.
And not like everyone is like... Like the vast majority of people. I mean, there are people like in living in under conditions people in Raleigh are living in. Like there's the whole spectrum of people. It's not like it's just like this diamond crusted...
People love to make generalizations about places.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And you know I'm all about specifics.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And how did you get into, like, so as far as, like, the performance, like, you do, like, UCB, obviously.
Yes. Oh, yeah. When does this come out? I might plug something.
You could plug it. I could put it out, like, on tomorrow.
Great.
I don't know.
Tomorrow would be great. We'll do that. So I'm on a sketch team.
Uh-huh.
Sketch comedy. And we met through UCB, uh-huh. which is one of the theaters in LA. And I started taking classes, and then I met these people, and they're very great. And so we are just about to release, we've been working for like since like November on like a whole batch of videos.
Mm-hmm.
It's like our first one. We've been doing stage stuff and kind of getting to know each other.
Yeah.
We've been together for a year. We've been working on these videos and we are finally like releasing them this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did enough of them where we're going to cut them together into like a 25 minute. It's like a little sketch show thing.
That's awesome.
And I keep wanting to call it a pilot, but then you said once that like when people call something a pilot, but there's not anything coming after it, that's not a pilot. And that's true. And so I wanted to ask you, actually, I thought of this in the car.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it a sketch show?
Just like, like a sketch show. Or, I mean, are you going to do like an introduction or like a walkthrough? Like Did you ever watch an episode of Key and Peele?
We built it like an episode of Portlandia.
Right.
It's got a cold open and a title sequence and then little transition bits. So it's like an episode of something. But we're just not going to
make... But episode only really implies that there's going to be like more.
Right. Is it a sketch featurette?
It's just a series of short films or something.
Yeah. That's the trouble, is there's no good word. There's no, like, sexy little word that you can tell people.
So you're not going to release them individually? It's only going to be...
We're going to release them individually, too. But then we're going to say, if you want to watch them all at once in, like, a comfy couch situation in the dark with a snack, here they are.
Okay.
Because we screened them together, and it was like, this feels good. They feel better together than they do apart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just hard to get people to watch a 20-minute thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't expect anybody to watch any of these. No. That's not why we did that.
Yeah.
But we learned a lot. And, yeah, I don't know. I just don't know what to call it.
You could just call it... it doesn't need a name. It's just a bunch of stuff.
Maybe it's just sketches.
It's just a bunch of people and sounds.
Yeah,
and
I found it an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
And we got nowhere, but nowhere is somewhere.
I guess. but the performance thing, how does that factor in? I guess you were doing theater, so you were always have been performing.
I stopped in college. My roommates were all actors, and they did a production of Arsenic and Old Lace in our house. They were like all very active, and it was so cool. But I never performed for like those 3.5 years.
Sure.
And so then when I came back out here, I started taking improv as a way to get better at writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then sketch sort of called to me more because it's more writery.
Sure.
But then I realized that it's very hard to count on people you're not paying to act in your sketches and be good. Mm-hmm. Usually they'll do one of those two things.
Yeah.
They'll either show up or they'll be good and be late. So I realized that I forgot that I like performing.
Yeah.
And so we started performing together as well as writing, this team and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we're called The Water Store. And it's great.
Do you want to keep performing like professionally? Is it really just like a hobbyist thing?
Yeah, no. I thought it was a hobby. And I almost thought like I just don't have the right, like I don't really have a type to like be an actor.
Sure.
If that makes sense. I'm just not like a classical...
It's hard because that's almost like the sweet spot of like, oh, who else could be the Logan Ritchie character?
That's true. Yeah, I don't have to be hotter than like the hot guys.
Yeah.
That actually makes sense. But I didn't really get that. And so I just didn't think of... I thought that LA was going to be so cutthroat. But then I realized that like it's easy to find opportunities to perform.
For sure.
Especially if you make your own opportunities.
Yes.
Which is what everybody's doing now.
Yeah.
And so... I just got the bug again, mm-hmm. and I love it, mm-hmm. and I want to get better at it. And so we're releasing. We did all those videos, and we're also doing a half hour. We're our first like half hour stage show at UCB
mm-hmm.
is in early August. It's on August 2nd.
Cool.
And that we've been working on for a while,
yeah.
and we just got a date for it. And so I'm very excited do a whole cohesive thing because that's something that I've never done.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
It's like how you can go to UCB shows and it's just like the writers of How I Met Your Mother or whatever.
Yeah.
And they also just do these shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happens a lot in TV that I didn't really know about is that a lot of times in a room you'll pitch a character and then they just won't want to cast it. So they'll let you do it.
Sure.
Like Starburns on Community was a writer for Community.
Oh really?
Yeah.
What's his name? He's in Silicon Valley too. Martin Starr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's him. Martin Starr is Starburns.
Yeah.
No.
Is?
No. Martin Starr is someone else.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
I always thought his name was Starburns.
But Martin Starr is an actor. No, Martin Starr is Freaks and Geeks. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but like stuff like that happens on shows all the time. Like Lutz from 30 Rock is a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I used to see that guy.
And so once I learned that, I was like, oh, okay, good. A lot of people do both.
Yeah.
And like that's how Mindy Kaling got on The Office.
Uh-huh.
So it seemed like a bit more of an open door. And so I was like, okay, now that I know that that's possible.
Yeah.
Down the road when I'm in the writer's room, I'm going to want to have performing chops.
Yeah.
And so I might as well be doing it.
For sure.
Because I love it anyway.
For sure.
And if I'm better at it, then maybe I can do it professionally later.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. As opposed to like trying to break in as an actor, I think it'll be easier for me personally.
Yeah. Who wants to be an actor, man?
Yeah, it's harsh. And I would prefer to have nice things. Yeah. So, at the start. Nice things at the start.
Yeah, you want to go to Restoration Hardware as opposed to IKEA.
Yeah.
We're getting out of the IKEA.
Yeah. I'm a Crate and Barrel bitch, full-blooded.
So is that, I mean, is there at all a specific, like, and I know that, like, the idea of, like, because any amount of success, like doing this sketch show that you're doing.
Right.
Like you've done it, and now I'm sure you're already like, oh, yeah, I got to do all this other stuff now. Yeah, right. This isn't fulfilling me.
Well, that's good, is that you're always at the bottom of a staircase here. Right. Like if I had stayed in North Carolina, there would be so few opportunities that I would be, like, already headlining at the one improv place, club.
Right.
And be learning nothing.
Yeah.
And so that, I'm really grateful for that, actually. I really love the, like, cascading ladder of opportunities that you're always sort of climbing.
Yeah.
As far as, like, bastions of success.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you have one? Is it, like, show running? Is it?
Yeah, I don't know yet. One thing that I haven't done that I haven't sort of passed yet is I haven't been paid to write yet. Sure. I've had my stuff selected.
Sure.
And I've been a writer's assistant. Mm-hmm. And I pitched an episode idea that ended up making it into season 2 of Timeless.
Cool.
Which was cool, but I wasn't paid. I didn't get, like, a story by credit or anything. Yeah. So, like, that would be the next professional step is, sure, like, paid writer.
Be a professional writer,
right,
or whatever.
Right. And then as far as comedy goes, just more shows and more. Yeah. My favorite part about doing sketch, especially on stage, isn't even necessarily performing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, like, just the little tiny traces, mm-hmm, that you can see,
mm-hmm,
that the things that you've done or seen,
sure,
leave. Like, I really, like, just the very few times that someone has, like, bumped into me at a comedy club,
mm-hmm,
and remembered a sketch and said that they liked it and that it was, like, weird in a way that they hadn't seen.
Right.
That's, like, very valuable.
Sure.
And that is what keeps me going more than, like, an audience response at a show.
Right.
Because I love talking shop with other creative people. Yeah. And that's what UCB is great for.
Yes,
it is. And this friend group is great for. Yeah. It's like, there are so many people that you can...
You're so saturated. It's like, we can't be in the room with each other for more than, like, 5 minutes before it's like...
Yeah.
You're talking about something.
Yeah. And it's so nice to have those sort of high art conversations. Because conversations about comedy that you've seen or about projects that you're working on are high art conversations.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of culture to it.
Yeah.
And I love that. I would prefer that than, like, I don't know, than, like, talking about what we're watching on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I love conversations like that.
Yeah, me too. And it's hard. Do you find any difficulty with, like, separating, like, the discussions about what things are about with, like, the actual making of the thing and making it good? Because, like when you go home, when I go home, I'll try to, like, talk to, and I'll, if I send, not everything that I make, but I'll send stuff that I've made to friends, and they'll be like, oh, this is cool. If they're actually watching it, you know, is to be seen. But, like, when I actually am in person with them, I always have this resounding sense of, like, oh, this world that I've created in my own head where, like, making things is important and good and people like things. And then you go to Killingworth, Connecticut, and you're like, oh, no one gives a shit. Like, like, some people, like, even, like, with something like The Last Jedi or something like that, it's like, oh, yeah, like, I had a lot of riveting conversations about, like, the most popular movie of the year. And then I went home and, like, no one cared. Like, it was just like, oh, yeah, I liked that old Luke Skywalker was old in this one. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think I actually find that refreshing because it's a bit of a break.
Me too. I think
because I don't go home often enough for it to get annoying.
Yeah, I go home like once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like we sometimes step in our own way of, like, you're talking so much about, like, how to do something that it, like, inhibits, like, what you liked initially about even doing the thing, which
right,
is just,
yeah,
like,
you can get
being silly or just acting or some fun idea. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I really like to find those moments in conversations and interject something that's just strange enough to where it sets the people off balance and they snap out of the pattern,
right,
of talking and talking and talking about the same shit.
Right.
And so maybe that's a little bit, anti-establishment.
Yeah.
But
you're kind of anti-establishment as, like,
Yeah, well, and I first of all, I actually, this is one of the things that I really like about being friends with you, is that we are both not afraid to get into a discussion.
Yeah.
And we're both like, and actually a lot of people in our friend group, like nobody's really wishy-washy. Everybody has opinions, which is good.
Yeah.
But we're also, it's nice to challenge each other about stuff. Like, like a lot of times it's easy to just kind of back off.
Yeah.
When somebody is espousing their opinion about Star Wars.
Right.
But I know with us that it's always safe to be like, no, that's bullshit. And here's why I think that.
Yeah.
And it just, and I like learn new stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
From talking to you.
Well,
and it's,
well, it's just like retweet culture, right? It's just like, it's just like we're all like, oh, you're doing so great, like let me comment on your Instagram photo and stuff like that. It's like, no, like,
yeah,
like,
no.
Like show up to for people, like, like be like put a wrench in the system just to see if you can fix it.
Yes,
because if you threw the wrench, if you throw a wrench in the system, if you like really fuck shit up and then it remains broken, maybe it was always broken.
Yeah.
Like maybe it was always gonna get to that point and now you need to deal with it. So it's like that meditation technique of like you let your mind wander and then you bring it back.
You know? Like, you experience the thought and then you go back to the,
exactly. And so what, just one more thing, because I know like we said as far as bastions of like literal professional whatever,
right?
Is there like an, do you see yourself with some type of like mantra or like mission statement under which all of you creating something goes, or not even creating, I mean like do you see like your life being pointed in the direction of like a mission statement?
Yes,
it could be creative focus or it could just be general.
Yeah, I think, well, especially with creativity, I feel like I've always felt this way, but I heard it in words for the first time from someone else recently, and it's, I don't remember who said it, but everyone says write what you know.
Yeah,
but the second half of that is, so know interesting things.
Sure.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, writing something that's familiar to you is always going to be good.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be better. But also that doesn't mean that you should just write about your office job.
Right.
That means that you should have a rich and varied experience in your life, and like a whole collection of experiences. Mm-hmm. And so like, I always find that when I'm writing something and I'm blocked, it's just because I haven't done enough research on the thing.
Right.
And so like writer's block, it's like, that's a time to go back and get into the subject that you're exploring or research until you know which way that you're going.
Sure.
There's no excuse for just, I don't know what to write.
Right.
And so, yeah, just having, like, really, really knowing and listening more than you talk to, like, specific things in your life that you will then write about is, like, very important to me.
Do you have any, I mean, do you find, like, maybe it's so natural to you, but, like if you were to give advice to someone that is looking to, like, be more open to life, do you have it? Because I think that, like, it's easy enough, like, cause I think we have that in common where like, I'm very naturally someone that is just like when we were on a road trip the other week, there was a cliff, to jump off of and it was like too shallow at the bottom to jump and make me feel safe. And I was trying to make myself okay with that. It was profoundly an unsafe thing to do. And then I did it and I was like, man, I would have been mad if I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Cause I just need to like, throw myself like up against a new experience or a dangerous experience or something like that.
Yes.
And it's hard, I think, to like naturally want to do that or naturally have what's the word I'm looking for? Like to naturally be adept at,
risk
or just new experience. Yeah.
Because
new experience doesn't equate risk.
Well, even like going up to talk to someone at a party is a risk, like not just jumping off of cliffs,
not just a dangerous,
truly like anything. Like, things that challenge you are good for you. And I think a lot of people don't have that feedback loop entirely closed.
Right.
And I wonder, how the best way is to open that up. I'm good at doing that in person. I'm just not sure if I can...
Could, like, put it into words.
Yeah, well, because I'm really good about, like, guiding friends into adventures.
Yeah.
Just because I've... Like, Kristen did that for me.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to do it for other people.
Sure.
So I would say, first of all, find adventurous friends. And don't be afraid to challenge each other. But also, a big part of it is just... shutting up.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, a big part of writing and of being happy for me that I realized I had to change and then changed was talking less, shutting up, and really listening. And not just listening to, like not listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And not listening to what other people are saying when they're talking to you or at you, but listen to what other people are saying when they don't think you're listening.
Right.
Because truly, like, you'll never be able to ask for, like, an old lady asking for a glass of water, or you'll never be able to write that if you've never listened to it.
Sure.
Like, you'll never be able to write a good old lady asking for a cup of water if you don't know what word she says and you don't ask yourself why.
Right.
And so just, a good place to start for, like, getting yourself more used to being in unfamiliar situations, I think, is just being okay with not being on your phone and sitting somewhere public and people watching.
Yeah.
And being okay with silence between friends.
Yeah.
And then later talking about, did you notice that, you know, all those birds above us when we were walking down the street?
Sure.
And it just makes me, it makes me feel better. It's a big part of my mental health.
Yeah.
And it also works for writing.
Cool. Good. I like that. So I got some closers. So this is the most interviewee, and I'm trying to find new ways to, like, sometimes it fits in, sometimes it fits in.
Oh, like you could have snuck it in earlier if we were, like, on the subject.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have, because the one that I like to do that's a little bit bigger of a one is, like, you mentioned a lot about how much you value being friends with people and being a friend.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as, like, the qualifiers for being a good friend, like or being just a friend in general?
Mm-hmm. Openness is huge.
Yeah.
I would say curiosity and passion. Yeah. If you're a generally uncurious person, maybe think about why that is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe everybody's curious about different things.
Yeah.
And that's good too.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to Emily's episode on the way here. It was very good.
Oh, thank you.
I loved it. And the thing that she said about, she likes having friends that all have, are all going after things.
Yeah.
And are all working toward things. I think that's cool. And just honestly, like, support, equal parts, like, support and challenge.
Yeah.
Is ideal.
I like that. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, because if it's all support, then you'll just be inside all day.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's all challenge, then you'll hate each other.
Right. Yeah, that's good. And I started asking, like, what's your favorite ice cream and why? Because that's always been a question that I like. It feels like you could tell a lot about a person by that.
Uh-huh.
Just by, like, what's your favorite ice cream? Like, because that's something that you haven't thought about. But if you put a why to it, maybe you're going to unlock a little bit more something about how, like, you really like just some very plain flavor. And maybe it doesn't speak to your personality, but I, like, think it does.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like one of those classic, like, first date questions, because you don't have an answer ready, and so you have to be yourself.
Yeah. So what's the ice cream?
I love coconut ice cream. Either coconut milk, like, based.
Yeah.
Or just, like, a dairy ice cream that's coconut flavored.
Yeah, coconut. You ever been to, like, Creamistry?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, right, or, like, there's this one in North Carolina where it's toasted coconut, and each of the toasted coconut pieces individually is covered in chocolate, so it doesn't get wet, and it's suspended in the ice cream.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. Yeah. How do they do that?
I've thought about this a lot, and I did it once. And you have to get, like, a really fine mesh cooling tray, or, like, a sifter almost.
Uh-huh.
And put the toasted coconut flakes on it.
And then just
And then cover the chocolate.
Yeah.
And then you have to temper it so that it's really runny, and it'll just run down. And once it dries, you break it apart, kind of, like, brittle. And then you mix it in the last 5 minutes of churning.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, also, especially, like, almost room temperature, very soft, over a brownie.
Oh, yeah.
Ideal.
Over the brownie.
Ideal.
Especially if you have a plate situation where you can carve through the brownie and get it all in one fell swoop.
Yeah, I'm notorious among my friends for gridding up my food, like cutting it into a grid of squares, adding something crunchy, and then just mixing everything up like a disgusting swamp smoothie.
Uh-huh.
And just eating it that way, so that's what I do.
That's good. And what's the why on the coconut?
The why on the coconut? It's my mom's favorite.
Okay.
And so I always think of her.
Inherited, taste.
Yeah, inherited preference, or just like, I remember I would always get a toasted coconut donut for my mom. We would get, like, a dozen.
I like a coconut.
It was just so nice.
Yeah, I like a coconut.
It's just a flavor that I love a lot. I was vegan for a bit, and so it was, like, all coconut everything.
Yeah.
Um,
well, there he is. That was that. I feel like we kind of did it. Like, we kind of put you into a
ball. Yeah, I didn't know what we would.
I didn't know either. I was thinking, is this going to get really wild? But I feel like in terms of, like, we got
it. I don't even know if it was wild enough.
Well, that was the thing, is that maybe that's why it was so good, is because it was like we got the truth of it all and we kind of started there.
Right.
We got one good story with all the details.
Oh, yeah.
And then we kind of wounded through all, like, the passions and the real stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and my dad sold that car that I stole with the CD that I made still jammed into the CD player. So someone
got that.
We'll fish that out one day and be like,
did he recently sell it? Or
yeah, year? like a year ago.
Oh, so it was just in there for like 6 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, there he is, Logan Ritchie.
Yeah. Follow the Water Store.
Yeah.
Water Store sketch on social media. And if you YouTube the Water Store, you'll hopefully find our videos if I get around to uploading them.
Yeah.
Which I will. Yeah. Great.